Fletch found himself leaning against the counter, his hands spread, his feet spread. One cop had his hand on the back of Fletch's neck, forcing his head down. The other's fingers felt through Fletch's T-shirt, his shorts, checked the tops of his athletic socks. "What did he do?" the man in running shorts asked. The eyes of the woman in tennis whites widened. She stepped back. "He was robbing the store," a cop answered. "He was not," the man said. "He's been standing here 15 minutes. "He was about to rob the store." "He gave a name. He was waiting for pizza." They pulled Fletch's arms behind his back. He felt the cool metal of the handcuffs around his wrists, heard the click as they locked. "He's robbed lots of stores," the cop said. "Liquor stores, convenience stores. Once he got his pizza, he'd rob this store." "Oh," the man said. The other cop said, "Even a robber's got to eat, you know." "He doesn't look like a bad guy," the man in running shorts said. "Fast. You'd never catch him once he started running." "Well," a cop said, "we caught him." The man said to Fletch, "Your name Ralton?" "No." "That does it for me," the man said. "He gave the name Ralton, phony name." "His name's Lidicote," said a cop. "Alexander Lidicote." "That's probably phony too," said the man. "Ramirez," the counterman called. The woman in tennis whites paid for her pizza. "Let's go," the cop said. Both hanging onto Fletch, they waited for the woman to go through the door with her pizza. "Can we take my pizza with me?" Fletch asked. "I'll let you have some." "Thanks anyway," a cop answered. "We just had Chinese takeout." Outside, they put him in the back of the police car carefully and slammed the door. As they settled in the front seat, the cop in the passenger seat looked at his watch. 11:40. We take him all the way downtown. We'll never get back in time to go off duty at 12.
"What's so special about him?"
"Dispatch said take him straight downtown to headquarters."
"Yeah," the driver started the car. "We run a taxi service."
"I could save you the trip," Fletch said.
He was trying to fit his handcuffed hands into the small of his back against the car seat.
"My name's not Little whatever. I've got identification in my wallet."
"Sure, I bet you have. Might as well get going, Alf."
"You've got the wrong guy," Fletch said.
The cop in the passenger seat said, 12 years on the force, and I've never yet arrested the right guy."
The car started forward.
"We didn't read him his rights."
The other cop looked through the grill at Fletch.
"You know your rights?"
"Sure."
"That's good. He knows his rights, Alf."
"Cruel and unusual punishment already," Fletch said. "Letting a guy smell pizza for 15 minutes, then not letting him have any."
"Tell your lawyer."
The police car bumped over the curb from the pizza store's parking lot onto the road. Fletch said, "Next stop, the guillotine."
Chapter 34.
Fletcher?
On the cell bunk that reeked of disinfectant, Fletch sighed with relief. The guard opening the cell door had called him Fletcher. Confusion regarding who he was over. Now he could go to his apartment and get some sleep. He stood up. He figured it must be about 4 in the morning. For about 3 hours, he had lain on his bunk listening to two men, not synchronized, vomiting, one old man whimpering, another singing for more than an hour, over and over again, the refrain, "I'll be blowed, Lucy, if you will." In the cell next to him, two male streetwalkers argued endlessly and passionately about barbers. One had asked Fletch how to get a job with the Ben Franklin Friends Service. Fletch answered he didn't know, he was just a bouncer there. Fletch's cellmate was a portly, middle-aged man in white trousers and sandals who said he was a schoolteacher. The afternoon before, he said, he had stabbed one of his students. There was blood on his trousers. After telling Fletch this, he curled on his bunk and fell asleep.
"Come on," the guard said, "move it."
"Am I free to go?"
He followed the guard between the cells to the steel door. While he was being booked as Alexander Lidicote for more than 20 incidents of armed robbery, Fletch's wallet and watch had been taken from him. Photographs of Alexander Lidicote were with the Warrens. Looking at them upside down, Fletch saw a remote resemblance. While handing it over, Fletch showed the booking officer identification in his wallet, his driver's license, and press card, proving who he was. Without really looking at the identification photographs, the booking officer charged him with stealing the wallet of Irwin Morris Fletcher as well. The other side of the steel door, Fletch turned right, toward the stairs to the booking desk in the lobby. The guard grabbed him by the elbow.
This way, please.
They went to the left, past offices. Most of the doors were open. Lights were on, people working in the offices. At the end of the corridor, they came to a closed door. The guard opened it with a key. He snapped on the inside light. 6 chairs were around a long conference table. Nothing else was in the room. High up on the far wall was a barred window.
"Wait here," the guard said.
"Why are you holding me?" The guard closed the door behind him. Fletch snapped off the light, crawled onto the table in the dark, and fell asleep. The light snapped on. The door was open. Lieutenant Gomez was standing over Fletch.
"You make yourself at home wherever you are, don't you?"
Fletch sat up.
"What time is it?"
He was cold.
5:30 a.m. The jailhouse swimming pool doesn't open for another half hour. The mayor and his top aides are down there cleaning it for you now. They know you like to go skinny dipping every morning."
"Glad to see you." Fletch remained sitting on the table. "You get to work early."
"Working on an important case," Gomez said. "The murder of Donald Edwin Habeck. You know anything about it?"
"Yeah, read something about it in the newspapers." Fletch yawned and rubbed his eyes.
"Did you get the gun?"
"What gun?"
"The gun I left for you last night. I left it upstairs at the desk for you with a note."
Gomez repeated, "What gun?"
"I think it's the gun used to kill Habeck. I found..."
Gomez looked at the door. Biff Wilson stood in the door, shaved and suited as well as ever, wrinkled and rumpled.
"Oh, hi, Biff," Fletch said. "Did you bring the coffee?"
Biff snorted.
"I guess I was a wise guy once. Was I ever this much of a wise guy, Gomez?"
"You were never a wise guy," Gomez said. "Always the altar boy."
"I thought so."
Biff closed the door.
"I'm not even sure I remember precisely what it is one does to a wise guy."
"On the police, we break his balls," Gomez offered. "Do all the guys in journalism have balls?"
Biff stood closer to Fletch.
"Hi, kid. I heard you were incarcerated."
"Case of mistaken identity," Fletch said. "Robber named Lidicote. Apparently his picture had been circulated to all the liquor stores, pizza parlors."
Biff said to Gomez, "Can we make the charge stick a while?"
"A while," said Gomez.
"You can't," Fletch said. "Booking desk has already checked the identity in my wallet. That's how you know I'm here, right?"
"Wallet?" Biff asked Gomez.
"He didn't have a wallet," Gomez said. "Just a stolen wristwatch."
Biff nodded at Fletch.
"We were talking about a gun," Fletch said.
Biff looked at Gomez.
"What gun?"
"A gun I found," Fletch said, "outside the News Tribune. I turned it in to Sergeant Wilhelm Rome last night with instructions to give it to Gomez."
"I don't know about a gun," Gomez said.
"You're a good boy." Biff stroked Fletch's leg with the palm of his hand. "A real good boy."
Fletch moved his leg.
"Muscle."
Biff dug his fingers into Fletch's thigh. "Look at that muscle, Gomez." Fletch got off the table and moved away.
"And what do those shorts say?" Biff squinted. "I can't quite read them. Can you, Gomez? Some high school track team?"
"Ben Franklin Friend Service," said Gomez.
"Football," said Biff. "I think that means a football team."
"That's another story," Fletch said.
"I sure would like to know what you found out," Biff said.
"Lots," Fletch said. "You write lousy obituaries, Biff."
"Why do you say that, Lidicote?"
"For one thing, Jasmine and Donald Habeck never married. He never divorced Louise."
"Yeah, what else?"
Fletch looked from Gomez to Wilson and shook his head.
"What else?" Biff asked.
"Have you talked with Gabe yet?"
"Who?"
"Felix Gabe, child molester. An ex-client of Habeck. Served 11 hard years. Released from prison last week."
"Have you talked with him yet?"
"Not yet."
"You've been bird-dogging me all week, kid. Talked with everybody in the Habeck family, as far as I know, even the brother in the monastery. You're stealing our thunder. What for, Lidicote?"
Again, Fletch shook his head.
"This was no gangland slaying, Biff. You're on the wrong track."
"You know better than we do, huh? The newspaper assigned you to this story?"
"The museum angle."
"Oh, the museum angle. That makes sense to you, Gomez?"
"No sense whatever, Biff."
"I think this kid ought to get lost," Gomez said.
we can lose him. Some sort of bureaucratic tangle, Biff said. You know, kid, once you get entangled with the cops, any damn fool thing's liable to happen.
Sure, said Gomez. We'll put him in the van for the funny farm this morning. It'll be a good 10 days before anyone straightens out that bureaucratic tangle.
What will that get you, Fletch asked. A few days? You think I'd shut up about it?
Can't blame us for a bureaucratic tangle, Biff said. I'm not even in this building this morning. You're not here either, are you, Gomez?
Nah, I'm never in this early.
This is a real wise guy. Our offer of a few days' vacation at the funny farm doesn't frighten him. We should stick a real charge on him, Gomez. Get him off my back forever. Is that what you do with wise guys? I forget.
Generally, Biff, if you're going to hit somebody, you should hit him so hard he can't get up swinging.
Yeah.
Although speaking softly, the veins in Biff's neck and temples were pulsing visibly. His eyes glinted like black pebbles at the bottom of a sunlit stream.
I've heard that somewhere before. Let's hit him with a real charge so he can't get up again swinging. Let's see. He was picked up as Alexander Lidicote. While he was being booked, it was discovered he had a seller's quantity of angel dust in his pocket. You got any spare PCP, Gomez?
Sure, said Gomez, for just such an occasion.
Fletch was hot.
All because I'm bird-dogging your story, Biff.
Because you're a wise guy, Biff said. There's no room for wise guys in journalism, is there, Gomez?
You were always an altar boy, Gomez said to Biff.
We play by the rules, kid. You get convicted for possession of a seller's quantity of PCP, Fletcher, and somehow I doubt John Winters and Frank Jaffe are going to want to see you around the News Tribune emptying wastebaskets anymore, or any other newspaper.
What am I supposed to say, Fletch asked, that I'll back off and be a good boy?
Too late for that, Biff said. I've decided you're a real wise guy. We want you gone.
I'm supposed to say I'll go away?
You'll go away, Gomez said. At taxpayers' expense, we'll see to it.
Fletch laughed.
Don't you think I'll ever come back, Biff?
Biff glanced at Gomez.
Maybe, maybe not. Who cares?
You'll care.
I doubt it. You spend a few years inside now, and what with one thing and another, you won't even be able to walk straight when you get out. Not much of a threat.
Biff said to Gomez, find out about this gun he's talking about. Where's the PCP?
Got some in the locker.
Get it. We'll go to your office and rewrite this kid's booking sheet.
Got some real coffee in the office. We'll have some real coffee.
I could use some.
Fletch said, Jesus, Biff, you're serious.
Have I ever made a joke?
Ann McGarahan said you're a shit.
She should know. Biggest mistake of her life was marrying me. Everybody says so.
Gomez laughed. You the reason she never had any kids, Biff?
Had something to do with it. The lady didn't like to be screwed by anybody with whiskey on his breath.
Fletch said, Jesus.
Guess I won't be seeing you around anymore, kid, Biff said. Can't say I'll miss you.
Biff, someone will come get you in a while, Gomez said. Enjoy waiting. It'll be a lot of years before you ever get to spend any time alone again.
We're gonna go cook your papers, kid. Biff held the door open for Gomez.
And believe me, Gomez and I are the greatest chefs in the world.
Fletch stood alone in the fluorescent-lit room. The door had thwunked closed. Wilson's and Gomez's footsteps faded down the corridor. Muffled shouts came from the cell block. Louise Habeck crossed his mind. Fletch looked up at the dirty, barred window. Even with the bars on the outside, an electric wire ran from the closed window into the wall. There was no air-conditioning heat vent. The walls were painted cement. Green sneakers, blued hair, and a flowered dress. It was crazy. Fletch went to the door and turned the knob. He pushed. The door opened. He looked out. The corridor was empty. His heart going faster than his feet, he ambled along the corridor and up the stairs. There was no one at the counter of the booking office. In the lobby, the same black woman who had been weeping there the night before was now sitting quietly on a bench. The sergeant at the reception desk was reading the sports pages of the News Tribune. It took Fletch a moment to get the sergeant's attention. Finally, he looked up.
Lieutenant Gomez and Biff Wilson are having coffee in the lieutenant's office, Fletch said. They'd like you to send out for some donuts. Jelly donuts.
Okay.
The sergeant picked up the phone and dialed three numbers. "The lieutenant wants some donuts," he said into the phone.
"No, he has his coffee. You know Gomez, if it ain't mud, it ain't coffee."
"Jelly donuts," Fletch said.
The sergeant said, "Jelly donuts."
Chapter 35.
News Tribune Resource Desk, code and name, please.
"Hiya, Pilar, how you doing?"
"Good morning, this is Mary."
"Oh, good morning, Mary.
Code and name, please."
Still ravenously hungry, Fletch was glad at least to be back in his own car, headed for his own apartment.
1790-9, Fletcher.
Jogging to the bus stop, his eyes scanning the storefronts for a place open for breakfast, Fletch then realized he had no money. The police had stolen his wallet and keys. The thought amused him that if he robbed a convenience store, Alexander Lidicote would be blamed. His car was in the parking lot of a pizza store way out at the beach. He hitchhiked. The first driver who picked him up was a middle-aged man who sold musical instruments. He tried to interest Fletch in the Roxophone. He was then picked up by a van filled with kids headed for the beach. At that hour of the morning, they were passing around a joint of marijuana and already had finished one quart of white wine. A group of youngsters headed for the beach on a fine morning. Each was near tears. It was past 9 o'clock by the time Fletch arrived at his car, removed the parking violation notice from it, hot-wired it, and started the drive back to his apartment.
"Messages for you," said the resource desk's Mary over the car phone. "Someone named Barbara called. Sounds like a personal message."
"Yes?"
"We're not supposed to take too many personal messages, you know."
"Ah, come on, Mary, be a sport."
Fletch's hunger, the morning's heat, the bright sunlight made his eyes and head ache.
"Message is, did you eat all the pizza yourself? All is forgiven. Please phone."
The reference to pizza made his tum-tum beat a tom-tom.
"Well?" Mary asked.
"Well, what?"
"Did you eat all the pizza yourself?"
"Mary, that's a personal question. No personal questions, please."
"You did. I think you ate all the pizza yourself. There's nothing worse than expecting someone to bring you a pizza, and that someone eats it all himself."
"Mary, have you had breakfast this morning?"
"Yes."
"I haven't."
"You don't need breakfast with all the pizza you ate."
"Is there another message?"
"I wouldn't forgive you."
"Yes, Anne McGarahan wants to hear from you. Message is, Fletch, know you have your hands full with present assignment, but please phone in. Beware BW and other social diseases."
"Okay. What's BW?
"Mary, that's another personal question.
I never heard of BW.
"You're lucky."
"I thought I knew all the social diseases. I mean, I thought I knew of them."
"Fine. Now, I need the address of Felix Gabé." He spelled the name for her. "In the St. Ignatius District."
"Aren't you going to warn me about BW?
"Mary, stay away from BW.
"I mean, how do you catch it?"
"Sticking your nose in places it doesn't belong."
"Oh, we never do things like that. There's only one Gabé in the St. Ignatius District. First name, Teresa."
"That's it. He lives with his sister."
"That's 45447 Twig Street. Mapping shows the address to be a half block west of a car dealership on the corner."
"Thank you. One more. I need the address of Stuart Childers." Again, he spelled the name.
"That's disgusting," she said. "Anyone who does that deserves BW.
"Mary, that's 120 Keating Road. Mapping shows that to be Harnden Apartments.
Swank."
"Okay, thanks."
"I shouldn't tell you this, I suppose, but Mr. Wilson called in a while ago. He wanted that address, too."
"Which address?"
"The one in St. Ignatius. Teresa Gabé."
"Mary, you've already got BW.
"Oh, don't say that."
"Be careful, Mary. BW can lay you up a long time."
"This is an answering machine," Fletch said into his apartment phone on the third ring. "I am not able to come to the phone just now." "Fletch," Barbara shouted through the phone, "you don't have an answering machine."
"Oh," Fletch said, "I forgot." Fletch didn't have much. Across from the rickety second-hand couch where he sat, posters were on the wall of the harbor of Cagna, on the Italian Riviera, of Cozumel in eastern Mexico, of Belize, of Nairobi, Kenya, of Copacabana in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. He hoped someday to have some really decent photographs on his wall, a proper collection.
Maybe someday he'd have walls big enough to hold some decent copies of the paintings of Edgar Arthur Tharp Jr., the Western artist.
Are you all right?
Of course. On the chipped plate on the chipped coffee table in front of him, there was very little left of his breakfast of scrambled eggs, waffles, and bacon. Why do you ask?
You went out for pizza last night at 11 o'clock, and you never came back.
Oh, God, I didn't. Are you sure?
You never even phoned.
I did not eat all the pizza myself. I didn't get any of it.
Were you in an accident or something?
Or something. How come you're free to phone me? Cecilia finally get a customer for her jodhpurs?
I'm doing an errand for her at the drugstore. We damn near starved to death.
Did you lose those 8 pounds you don't like?
I think I did.
What did you and Cindy do?
Went to bed, finally. What else could we do? We waited for you until past 1 o'clock.
Did Cindy stay the night?
Of course. What else? We'd had drinks, remember? She knew she shouldn't drive.
Yeah.
Damned inconsiderate of you. You could have at least phoned.
I could have. Hung from the ceiling across the room was his surfboard, a thing of beauty, a joy forever.
We were worried. I phoned the pizza store. The man said no one named Fletcher had been there.
You ordered in the name of Ralton.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Where did you spend the night?
Long story. Mind if I tell you later?
Does it have to do with Haybeck?
I guess so. Fletch looked at his plate. His headache was gone.
Did you read Biff Wilson's piece this morning?
Yeah. The News Tribune was on the couch beside Fletch. It was not reported that a gun, the possible murder weapon, had been turned into police the night before.
His piece strongly indicates, Fletch, that Haybeck was bumped off by the mob because he knew too much.
Fletch sighed. Maybe he's right.
I mean, really, Fletch, how long has he been covering crime for the News Tribune?
A long time.
He must have contacts everywhere.
He must have.
I mean, sure, people must talk to him. The police, mobsters, informants. He probably has it all figured out.
Probably.
There's little point in your being up all night losing sleep over it. There's no point at all in losing your job over it.
Listen, Barbara, I've got to shave and shower and get to work.
Ate all the pizza and slept late. And I'm marrying you?
With a flick of his fingers, Fletch knocked the News Tribune onto the floor.
I'd have second thoughts if I were you, Fletch said. Too late. I'm on my umpteenth thought. Remember, you're having dinner with my mother tonight.
Absolutely.
6 o'clock at the beach house. If you disappoint her again, all her doubts about you will turn into certainties, for sure.
For sure.
You'll be there?
Absolutely.
Okay. By the way, Cindy said to call her at 12:30 sharp at 555-2900. She'll answer the phone herself.
Say that again? That's not the number of Ben Franklin.
No. She said she'll just be there at that time, waiting for you to call. That's 555-2900. She'll have things to tell you then.
Okay.
Fletch, this is Wednesday.
Already?
We're getting married Saturday. You absolutely must be at dinner tonight.
Okay.
There are things to discuss.
Okay, okay.
I've got to get back to work, Barbara said.
Fletch said, yeah, me too.
Chapter 36. I'm from the News Tribune, Fletch said. The woman who opened the door of the ground floor apartment at 45447 Twig Street was in a wheelchair. Are you Teresa Gabe? Her eyes were black, her face gray, her hair unwashed, uncombed.
We can't afford a daily newspaper. I don't like them anyway.
Has anyone else from the News Tribune been here? She shook her head, no. The car dealership at the corner of Twig Street seemed to be offering special sale prices on rusty six-passenger sedans. Fletch had parked near the dealership and walked the half block, scuffing through the waste paper and empty tins on the sidewalk. He almost stumbled over the legs of a woman asleep in a doorway. He was watching for a police car or Biff's car. While he breakfasted, talked with Barbara, shaved and showered, his doorbell had not rung. If it had rung, he planned to go through a back window and down the fire escape. Being falsely arrested as Alexander Lidicote for more than 20 robberies was slightly amusing. Having Wilson and Gomez contrive real charges against I.M. Fletcher for drug dealing was totally alarming. The police had not appeared at Fletcher's apartment. They were not now visible in the street.
But Wilson and Gomez had every reason to believe Fletch would show up at the Gabe apartment.
"Has anyone been here?" Fletch asked. "The police?"
Again, the woman shook her head no. Her eyes were dull.
She wheeled her chair aside.
Perhaps she next would close the door in his face. Holding the door open, Fletch stepped into the foul odor of the apartment.
"I'm looking for Felix Gabe."
Expression briefly came into her eyes as she looked up at him. She was surprised he was still there.
"He doesn't want a newspaper either."
Fletch pushed the door closed. "Need to talk to him." There was a bed, a mattress, and some blankets on a box in the room. Moving no further, the woman's attention went to a television tuned to a quiz prize show on a dark, heavy bureau. Fletch stepped through the only door into another room, a kitchen of sorts. There was a small refrigerator, a stovetop, a sink. Everything was filthy. Empty food cans overflowed the sink. The smell of garbage and excrement was stinging. Against the wall on the floor was a double-sized mattress without pillows or blankets. There was a massive brown upholstered chair between the mattress and the refrigerator. And in the massive chair was a massive man. His gaze remained on the corner of the walls behind the stovetop. A half-finished quart bottle of beer was in one hand on the chair arm. Slobbered food and drink were on his shirt and prison-issue black suit. Fletch sat on the edge of the mattress.
"What have you done since you've been out of prison?"
"Bought this chair."
Felix Gabe's free hand raised and lowered on the chair arm.
"Bought that mattress."
Felix looked at the mattress.
"Bought beer."
The counter in the corner beyond the refrigerator had more than 20 empty quart beer bottles.
"Beer's the only thing that fills me up now."
The fat creases on Felix's neck rearranged themselves as Felix turned his head and looked down at Fletch.
"I'm doing okay, first week out."
"Looks like you got enough to eat in prison anyway."
"Yeah, but she suffered."
Felix tipped the bottle toward the other room.
"No one took care of my sister in 11, 12 years. Scrounging food stamps. Sending kids out for cat food. Eating cat food off scrounged food stamps. You got it?"
Fletch nodded.
"Look at this place. Landlord took the living room and the other bedroom away from her. Only 'cause he couldn't throw her out. See that wall he put up?"
From the layers of filth on it, Fletch supposed the wall had been there for most of the 11 years.
"You call that legal?"
Fletch didn't opine.
"What are you going to do about it? She didn't do anything wrong. Why should she suffer?"
"Did you do something wrong?" Instantly, there were tears in Felix's eyes.
"I shouldn't have been put in prison. I was sick. What do you call someone who bothers small children?"
"Sick?"
"Sure. They had to put me away. Couldn't let me be loose. Had to keep me in prison until I was no good anymore. Had to wreck me. I don't know about prison, though. That's an awful insult to a sick person."
"At your trial, you didn't plead insanity."
"At my trial, I didn't say nothing."